today on Doomed! Yet another month goes by, and another Dem debate comes and goes as well. Folks, it is almost midnight on November 20th, well, almost November 21st, and you are listening to the Doomed with Matt Binder post-Democratic debate episode for the November debate, the one that was just aired on MSNBC. And we tonight have a guest joining us who's going to be fantastic. YouTuber Peter Coffin. How you doing, Peter? Welcome to the show.
I'm great. Thanks for having me. And we'll see. Maybe I won't be so great.
Oh, no, you will. I mean, listen, I'm already exhausted. I messed up the that introduction. I was, you know, just all over the place. But it's, you know, people have to understand.
This is
a post-Democratic debate show. And I think my listeners know by now that, let me pull us up on the feed so people could actually see us.
Nah.
Yeah, let me just do it. Listen, I can only imagine how, my listeners either watched it, watched the debate live with the Majority Port crew, or watched the debate live with the Chapo Trap House crew. So they've already been on a 2+ hour stream, and now they're tuning in to us. So they're already, I don't know if just audio would satiate them. They might just, they need to see people so they could stay awake, I'm sure. Although I will say, this debate started out horribly. It was going to be what I thought was going to be one of the worst debates. And then all of a sudden, a little bit more than halfway through, the moderators sort of let them go at it when they wanted to. And
yeah,
it became one of the better debates because no Democratic debate has let the candidates actually, this is going to be shocking, debate yet. It's been question to candidate, okay. Question to another candidate, okay. If a candidate does bring up another candidate, you may take this allotted time to respond, but respond to me, the moderator, and then we'll just go back to the other candidate who will also bring you up, respond to me, the moderator, and none of you will ever look at each other, talk to each other. This one, they let it fly a little bit towards the second half.
I feel like maybe they got bored, almost.
Right.
Like, I mean, we've seen so many of these at this point. We did, especially that first hour, it was really like a retread of a lot of stuff. I mean, not that the second hour wasn't in some ways, but I mean, we really heard a lot of the same stuff that first hour. We very separate from each other, a lot of performance, I guess, for lack of a better word. I mean, yeah, I pretty much agree entirely with what your assessment of what was interesting, what wasn't, as far as when and where.
Right. It was weird to me that we went through so many debates without like, you know, and it's still sort of happening. You see it. But luckily, you know, some people tonight, some candidates tonight decided to say, you know, screw it. We're going to go at it. But the debates have been so hands off. No matter what candidates on stage, there were moments, you know, here and there, you know, one of the previous debates when Castro knocked Biden for his age. And then there was mm-hmm. another moment where Booker...
Yeah, but boo.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
And it never went over with the crowd, but this crowd seemed into it when it happened. I don't know what's going on. Maybe people are just, at this point, they didn't want to see the candidates go at it, and they were just like, oh, no, you know, they'll just weed each other out, and we'll be down to just a few by now. But maybe people are now waking up and saying, holy shit, just having 12 people look at a camera and talk doesn't actually weed anyone out. They need to actually go at it and like knock each other out of this at this point, because it's getting ridiculous. We're almost in 2020. We're literally what, like less than 50 days away, I think, from January 1st. And it's like, what is going on? Why do we still have like 20 people in this race? 10 who are even reaching the Democratic, necessary things to get into a Democratic primary debate.
I feel like maybe something that kind of like triggered the response of sort of being fed up with this massive. I mean, for one, we have memories of the previous one, the Republican debates with 50 people on the stage. But two, we are still having people talking about entering the race. Like, we have Bloomberg filing paperwork in a couple of states. Hillary Clinton is still not ruling it out. This stuff, it sounds like 20 times more absurd at this point. And like, it, I feel like it almost kind of puts on the glasses, so to speak, so that people are looking at this and going, ah, are you serious? Are we literally going to have to hear this person say this thing again?
Right. Now, Peter, who are you? Who are you? Have you come out and supported anyone?
Oh,
yet?
Yes. It's Bernie Sanders.
Right. Right. Yes.
Sorry. There's no other choices.
Right. Right. And I will. And let's bring up Bernie first, because in my opinion, and I've on previous debates, I've said, you know, Bernie's done well, but, you know, he wasn't as assertive, or, you know, Bernie did OK, but they didn't give him enough time and he sort of fell into the back of the pack, even though he did good. But this debate, I feel, was his best.
I agree.
He stood out. Everything he said was strong. He was joking tonight. And
he brought
the
jokes. Yeah.
And, you know, it's so stupid that we have to care about it. You know, it should just be something that, you know, someone's supporters will go, oh, that's funny, he made a joke, and then we never talk about it. But some people care about that stuff and actually pick candidates based on how likable they are. It's like ridiculous. But OK, he was likable tonight. So, you know, and the foreign policy thing, let's bring this up straight at the top, because there's nothing that sets him apart more than that. Again, the guy just gets it, and he tonight especially asserted himself as the front runner in that aspect in every way, shape, and form. You know, he not only is on the right side of these issues. You know, he called out Saudi Arabia. Why is the U.S. such good allies with Saudi Arabia when, you know, a country like Iran we consider to be a hostile country to us? Mm-hmm. But then he did this amazing thing tonight, and I know some people had a problem with him, you know, adding the addendum that he's pro-Israel, but be that as it may, put that aside. Talking about Saudi Arabia and Iran, he brings up Israel, and that's something no one else would do. And on top of that, he brings it up to call them out for what they're doing to the Palestinians. And it was unprompted.
That was the best part about it, as a matter of fact.
Right. Find me. Don't just find me a candidate who's going to speak out for the people of Palestine. Find me a candidate who's going to speak out about the Palestinians without being specifically asked about them. There's nobody.
He did that with actually a couple of things. It wasn't just that. Like, he sort of, when they would ask a question about something, or he would even, I think it was in the con, I don't remember which one it was in the context of a response to somebody else. He was just like, I'm not talking about that. And just basically totally, I don't remember what it was. At this point, my brain is starting to shut off. But but I think my favorite thing that he did in terms of asserting himself, not necessarily as far as like explaining what he's for, but just coming in between that argument between Joe Biden and Tom Steyer over climate change being the number one priority, the big number one priority, because the number is what matters. Like, he just basically, these two are arguing over this one thing, and he just blazes in and he's like, I think that these companies probably have broken laws. And it just like brings out this, like, he blazes through this whole, like, they withheld information, they lied to us, stuff that's true and no one says. And like, you have these two dudes who are like arguing like from the point of, I have done something before which you haven't, and basically high hopes for a living, but from a different person.
Oh, we'll get
and he's just we'll
get to that very soon. But you know, you bring up a point that I want to come back to too. It's stunning to me that, you know, when he was running in 2016, the big attack on Bernie Sanders was, oh, he's a single issue candidate. He always brings up Wall Street and income inequality and the billionaires and the millionaires, and I mean, come on, ridiculous that that's a line of attack when it's clearly untrue.
The problem.
Right. And a problem. Yes. A problem. But also clearly untrue. But
yeah.
Yes. But that was the attack then. But now all of a sudden, the big thing they like to do in 2020 is call certain candidates that issue candidate if they only focus on the one single issue, but not as a negative. Like, for example, what's his face? I can't remember his name. He dropped out really early, having a mental block. He was the climate change candidate, they called him.
I'm blanking on it. It starts with J, I think, doesn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm having a real mental block.
He was in the July debate.
Right, yes.
Right?
Someone's gonna jump in the chat at any moment and save us.
Yeah.
From forgetting that.
He actually had like a really robust climate thing too.
Right, right, right.
But like that was it. That was. I almost had it.
He's the governor. He's the governor of like Washington or something.
It is Jay. It was a Jay.
Thank you, Mason. And yes, Inslee. Yes, but. His whole thing was that he was the climate change candidate, and I like the guy, but he's the climate change candidate, the media called him, as a positive thing. He just focused on climate change, had talked about nothing else pretty much. But the thing is, he had a good climate change plan, but when it compares to Bernie Sanders' climate change plan, actually, it's not even close. Bernie Sanders puts literally, I think it's something like $10 trillion more dollars into his climate change plan than Inslee did. And the idea that the guy with the best plan wouldn't be that issue's guy, it's just a person who just decides to just talk about that one issue, is insanity when we just came from a presidential election four years ago, where that was a negative to be the one policy person.
Well, and then on top of that, like, you have, is it good or is it bad? Well, it's really kind of neither. If you're hyper-focused on one thing, that's maybe... Like looking at Yang, for instance, he's hyper-focused on UBI. That's, like, the big Andrew Yang policy. And it doesn't really... Like, he'll bring anything back to that. And is that necessarily bad? Not necessarily. It shows that he believes in it. But it's also not like this... Like with Jay Inslee, a big positive, like who really thinks like $1,000 a month, that's going to fix everything. Like no person who actually has to pay bills and rent and all that stuff is like, that's going to end everything for me. So like move it over to climate change. If you do talk about climate change and you don't talk about other issues, then you're not going to solve climate change. Like that's the big thing right there. Climate change is so connected to so many other issues, whether it be criminal justice in particular, because we're going to see if as our climate changes, we're going to see changes in where people want to be on the planet. And if we aren't addressing criminal justice, if we aren't dealing with that stuff humanely and trying to actually build systems that encourage actual quote unquote justice, then we're going to end up doing more of what we're doing right now, which is totally screwing people from the global south. And that's not, I mean,
I'm glad you brought it up because let's actually talk about this. How the fuck did Bolivia not, or even Chile, how did neither come up in tonight's debate? Unbelievable.
And again, we still only have one candidate who has the right foreign policy regarding either of those countries.
Well, that to me is one of the reasons why it doesn't come up. Why would they throw Bernie that bone?
Exactly. You can't bring it up to anyone else because everybody has an answer that looks bad. Compared to the person who's like, okay, well, let's look at the evidence here. The definition of coup, or coup. I said coup.
Listen, the last episode of this show, I had Janice on this show, who's a major anti-Morales person, one of the leading voices propped up by the U.S. and Europe in the opposition to him. And I had her on, and we had a debate. And... it's something that it's incredible that the debate I had just literally a week ago, not even, it was last Thursday, so less than a week ago now, how that debate looks now just a week out. The right-wing coup could not be, you know, the coup to install a right-wing regime could not be any more obvious now. And no. You see the media go from not calling it a coup, but wanting to talk about so much about how Morales was a dictator, an authoritarian. But then all of a sudden they go from that to, oh, now that this is playing out, we're just going to sort of ignore it. Let's not talk about it as much as we were.
Yeah, they're not firing on protesters or anything like that down there.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's crazy. It's absolutely nuts that, like, those that Bolivia especially did not come up tonight.
It's transferred over into, like, pure, like, military dictatorship stuff. For instance, like people calling on this temporary regime to call for elections, like it looks silly when they're literally firing on protesters.
Oh, the idea, and this was one of Janice's big retorts to me. It was basically that, you know, these people were just put in place, you know, Añez was just rose to power to make sure they were free and fair elections. You know, never mind the giant Bible she's holding up saying she's bringing the Bible and God back to the palace. Never mind that they just said that they just declared that it's okay for the military and the police to fire on protesters. Never mind the fact that she has a long history of saying that she would like to see the indigenous people of Bolivia pushed out of the cities. Never mind all that
they're
stuff.
They're deleting all the evidence of, too.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's not just that they're ignoring it. Like, they're right. Ignoring the fact that they're also cleaning. They're sanitizing.
Right.
Like, it's further.
Like, this is what's going to happen in Bolivia. And I don't want to go into Bolivia conversation now during the debate, post-debate thing, but we're talking about it. And the people listening to the show tonight didn't get it from the DNC and MSNBC and the Washington Post. So they'll get a little taste of it from us here. You know, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be elections, and they're going to make sure they win. Or B... Mm-hmm. There ain't going to be elections. I mean, that's what's going to happen. It's one of those two things.
Definitely.
I'm not going to call it because I could honestly see it go either way. But if there are elections, then they're not actually going to really be those free and fair elections that you think were going to happen with Morales literally removed from his office through a coup. Well, that's all I got to say about that right now.
I mean, their houses got burnt down. Like, it's like... It's absurd, that whole situation. And you're 100% right. The reason why they didn't bring it up is because there's no good answers going to come out of anybody except for the person who called it a coup. And they don't want that. There's no other explanation for it. They don't want that accountability coming towards the media, because the second somebody says that on the media, I mean, it's a fly in the face of how they acted. Like, what they want to do is just act as if they didn't do that. If they didn't, like... someday, 10 years in the future, for instance, they might acknowledge this as like what it was and say, like, no, this was bad, because they do that with Pinochet now, for instance. And it's like, no, you got it wrong.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if you asked some of these guys what their true feelings on Pinochet is, and they might tell you something.
I think you're right.
And, you know, let's pivot to let's not completely leave Sanders and you know, because another thing I want to bring up is how, speaking of best on climate change, they also completely skipped him during the discussion about housing, when the guy rolled out the most expansive and best housing policy. But
and also we had the big up in the Lewi.
Right.
I thought it was really funny. We got the wagging finger up by Biden's head. I think it was during that question. You could see it often like he was trying to get something in, because obviously he's got the plan that will actually help people.
Right.
But.
So what was I going to. Oh, yeah. Let's bring up Warren, because tonight, I think, was weird to me. That,
yeah, a little.
You know, because before, you know, I don't think she did that great tonight. In fact, I think this was one of her worst debates. And
I
she had the most speaking time. And I get she's, you know, hovering in second or first and third and some. But I would say overall, she's probably in second right now. I think it's clear right now the race is Biden and then Warren and Sanders trading back and forth for second and third. And Buttigieg is sort of rising behind them, and we'll see how that pans out. I don't think he did that great tonight either. But
no.
But previous the last two debates, there was the argument could be made that Warren got so much time because she was the front runner, and she was rising in the polls then, and she was clearly on Biden's tails. But between the last debate and this debate, she has become stagnant. She has not risen in the polls anymore. In fact, she's dropped considerably. She's now hovering in most polls around Sanders, sometimes above him, sometimes below him. And they still treated her tonight as she was the clear front runner.
Yeah. And the thing about it is I feel as though, like, you could even see it in her demeanor. The energy is kind of not there. Like, I feel like a lot of the things that she said, she was now also kind of thinking about while saying, because am I going to do the version from before when I announced my Medicare transition plan, or I'm going to do the version after? Well, like, which version do I present here that I'm going to have nailed to me in the media? I feel like there's a lot more processing going on sort of while talking. And that's, I feel, a little abnormal for her, because I think a lot of what she says generally, even though I don't always take it as gospel truth, what she's saying, I do think she generally sounds passionate, generally sounds as though she believes in what she's saying. And I feel like there was a drop in the level on that with this one tonight. I don't know exactly how to explain it, but I feel like it wasn't all there for her tonight.
Right, right. And I think part of it is that in the earlier debates, I think it was impressive how she was able to come across. A lot of people didn't know her as well as, mm-hmm. A Bernie or Biden. And the whole professorial thing where she slowly takes you through it and she explains it very well and she really, it worked then. But I think now people know who she is. She doesn't herself have a clear position on some of these issues like she did earlier on. Mm-hmm. She's actually, Medicare for All, she's come back on that and sort of said, it's been discussed a lot online, but it's no longer full throttle Medicare for All plan from Warren. It's now, Medicare for All who want it year one, and then around the year three, we'll see about rolling out Medicare for All.
Which
is, that fight's going to be, everyone, we could even admit, as Bernie supporters, the fight is going to be hard to begin with. You really want to split it up into two separate fights, and on top of that, two separate fights with two completely different Congresses, because this third year of her term is going to come after a midterm election where
that's
right, right. We don't know how it's going to, how that's going
to. Well, and then the other thing is let's say you haven't passed Medicare. Let's say you're not going for a two-tiered approach. You haven't passed it, and you're edging into either second or third year where the elections are actually having a much bigger bearing. Let's just say there's one push and it's either during or after the elections. That election is the time to leverage power collectively outside and get votes for who you want in. But like, this is now this two push approach means like whatever our first fight is going to be, it's going to be equal for either of them, whether it's Bernie Sanders with Medicare for All or Elizabeth Warren with this Medicare for All who wanted public option, quote unquote, ramp up. Like, it's going to be the same fight tenacity wise with the Republicans either way. And I would think that it makes more sense to just put it all into one thing and be like, we're going to have this fight once and it's going to be over when it's over.
Right. Right. Yeah. But, another thing about Warren, and I completely agree with you. It's just, I feel like we could just do a whole episode on that if we wanted to, really.
That was the last thing I uploaded last week on this specific thing. Like, there's more than one issue that I've seen. Like, Carl Baeher put up a post on it, and basically talked about how there's going to be energy levels. Like, we're going to have all of this energy for the first fight, making the assumption that everybody believes that the second fight is going to happen and is going to be about Medicare for all for sure. Like, if we're going into the first one, even with, like, full, hey, I believe in this, it's going to work, like, we're going to end up fragmenting the whole thing over, do we stay with the Democrats or do we understand that this is really nonsense? Like, there's going to be two wings of this approach, and then you're going to split those two wings and then have them go through two. It's just not, it's absurd.
Another absurd thing tonight from Warren. And again, I want to really stress to people that, you know, I'm a fan of Warren. I was a bigger fan of Warren. I think she has hurt herself in this, you know, maybe she'll win and it'll all be worth it. But, you know, the Warren that's come out in this campaign is not the Warren I thought she was in a lot of ways, which is disappointing.
No.
But she's still my number two. And I know people say,
I totally agree with you. Out of this crop of people, easily the second best.
Right. And I know people probably think, you know, oh, Bernie people just say that and they're not going to vote for when it comes down to it. No, I think it's actually, you know, it's nice that I have someone who I'm not going to probably be as enthusiastic as I would be for Bernie. But if she wins, you know, I will gladly go out and cast my vote for her in the general election, hands down. It wouldn't even be hard. It wouldn't be, you know, it'd be super obvious to do. In fact, I would tell people to vote for her. Really easy thing to do as well.
I feel like it's not even like her versus Trump. It's so different than Biden or Buttigieg versus Trump.
Right, right. And the thing that really, and I mean, maybe it shouldn't be surprising if you know her position on these things, being that she's voted for Donald Trump's military budget. When she said that one of the problems is that more people aren't joining the army, the military.
Yeah.
More people aren't serving.
What was that?
What?
I don't have an explanation for that. It just, it sounds to me very much like that tweet from early in the year where she was talking about how one of the biggest things, I don't remember the wording of it, but some big aspect of climate change is it hurts our military readiness or some crap like that. And it's like, what are you talking about? What is this? I don't understand, like, why this, no one, like, and if you notice, nobody follows that point. Right. Nobody's like, I have a thing to say that has something to do with this. Nope. They don't want anything to do with it. It makes no sense.
Right. I mean, there's people, there's very many reasons why you join the military. And maybe you want to join it. Maybe you feel like it's your duty to serve the country. I if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. There's people, a lot of people, who join the military out of need. They would like the education that comes with it. They'd like to provide for their family, healthcare for their family. That's unfortunate that there's some people who are forced to go fight overseas and possibly die for those things. I would like them not to, unless they really want to join the military because they feel like they would like to serve their country. I would like the people who don't feel that way to not feel like they have to join the military just to get healthcare and education.
Yeah.
So the idea that, you know, you'd want to, you think that there's a problem where more people aren't, I think it's good if there's less people saying, let's fight in wars. I mean, clearly, if there was an actual need, you know, if this country, you know, I would say the last time we actually fought a war that was necessary was World War II. People were gladly signing up for the military in World War II to actually fight for something, you know, a cause. So I don't think we'd have a problem with, like, a dilapidated military if there was an actual reason to use the military. So I don't get it. It really rubs me the wrong way because it also, the whole idea, Pete Buttigieg, let's get to him, always brings up that he feels like there should be some sort of mandatory service in this country.
Why? Like, what, how does that help us in any way? Like, what, I'm not a huge fan of Tulsi Gabbard, but I think that one of the good things that she says constantly is noting that these wars that go on right now are regime change wars. And that's it. It's all about, like, our interests. It's not about, like, some existential threat. And again, like, that's not to say she's, like, my candidate of choice. Certainly not. But what is this point from Pete Buttigieg? It doesn't make sense to me. Like, I don't understand why I need to be told, like, let's say it's, now I'm 35, so let's say I'm 20 years young, or maybe 20 years. I don't know math well. Let's say I'm 15.
That's why you should be. That's why you need to support Andrew Yang. He'll teach you. He'll give you some lessons and maybe exactly. Give you a nice math cap.
That might be 20 years ago. It might not be. I don't know. One of the two. But point is, like, let's say I'm 15. I'm in high school, and somebody's telling me I have to mandatorily serve in the military. Like, all that's going to do is make me hate the military, A, and hate the government that allows that to go on. Like, it's just going to piss me off, because when I'm looking at the news as a 15-year-old kid right now, especially, let's say somehow I'm 15 years old now, and I'm looking at the news and I see wars that just have no real justification. And it's obvious at this point. When we see these wars, it's literally just about when somebody says these wars are about oil, like, nobody goes like, well, that doesn't make any sense at all to me. Like, it makes perfect sense. And it's an easy explanation that, I mean, it's not the entire explanation, no, but it's certainly enough of one where people are like, no, I don't want to go die for oil. I don't want to go march for oil. I don't want to do this crap. This doesn't, like, and it's just going to seed resentment and create all these people that don't want anything to do with any aspect of the state or governmental life or whatever.
Right. It's and the idea that people have the time or the ability to put towards community service, mandatory, I should say, community service or service in the military is just, you know, it's kind of gross to me that, you know, yeah. Like, it comes from a real area of privilege that you want, like, you think that this needs to be mandatory. Like, there's people who literally work, like, 2-3 jobs just to, you know, put a roof over their family's head. And you look at that and you think one of the problems is that they're not giving their time voluntarily. I mean, give me a break.
I think some of it is they see, like, these vegan IDF ads and they're like, oh, man, if only we had that here. Mandatory service, man.
You know, let's get to Pete Buttigieg. Guy is easily my least favorite person on stage.
By far.
Everything he says just comes off as if, you know, it's rehearsed, it's prepared, and the guy prepared it because, you know, he's going on TV. No, it comes off as if it's gone through 20 different layers of consultants. Yeah. Always amendable, by the way. Always subject to change. I just, you know, he does not belong up there. I mean, if you want to say that anyone could run for president, fine. But when you look at the field, he does not belong up there. It is ridiculous he's on stage. The guy is a mayor of a town of, I don't even know how many, but he won by, what, we had like 8,000 votes or something ridiculous like that. I mean,
I live a half hour from South Bend. There's 102,000 people, and 10 to 11,000 people voted in that election. That's such a terrible turnout. You have such a depressed, And I mean that in multiple ways, depressed as in voter depression, as well as in just people who want nothing to do with the political process because they see nothing good happening. That's the only way you get that kind of an outcome. People think that it's worthless to vote. And then you get somebody like Mayo Pete coming in. That's the only way you get this guy. Like, anybody with some level of organization could easily go down to South Bend and win. Like you don't have to do a lot.
Right.
That's not a lot of people. I mean, yes, 8,000, 9,000 votes is a lot of people to talk to. But in terms of, like, an actual political campaign, the length of time you have to talk to that many people and to get people, like, to hear, you know, some, like, it's just no actual real policy that Pete Buttigieg is actually talking about at any point. It's literally just this, like, okay, how can I talk for X amount of time about a thing without saying anything that offends anybody, but also without saying anything that commits me to anything. And it's just like, it's BS.
I honestly do not get a Pete Buttigieg supporter. I don't understand it. It just, it you know, it gets under my skin because I look at these people and I'm like,
I know several.
what is the appeal? What is, if you want a moderate or a centrist, who is Pete Buttigieg? You go with Biden, you even go with Klobuchar, someone who is actually a senator, yeah, who's accomplished things. Like, I don't understand what your who is a Pete Buttigieg supporter? If you want, I don't get it. I really don't know. I mean, the idea that some of these people were Hillary Clinton backers who attacked Bernie Sanders for not having enough black support in 2016 is hilarious to me, because this guy's got none. You know, if you thought Bernie Sanders didn't have enough in 2016, Pete Buttigieg, it's not that he doesn't have enough. He doesn't have any. Zero. In the polls, there's 0% from black people in this country. They don't like him. The idea that they don't know him is so disgusting, too, because it's basically saying that they're low-information voters. That's bullshit. Yeah. Obviously, it's harder for new candidates coming in. They need people to know each other. But we can also look at the polls and see where everyone is, and we can see, okay, you know, if they didn't know Pete yet, we still see the percentage of people who do know Pete. And a certain percentage of those people would be black, which means that there should be a percentage of those people who know him and who support him. The people who do know him don't support him. There's no, like, it's just not, it's just, to get 0%, you're basically saying that, like, 99.9% of black people do not know who Pete Buttigieg is, which is just not true.
No, absolutely not. And what you're also saying is that 99.9% of black people opted out of his email support list.
Well, they all support him then. Yeah. He actually got 100% black support. Biden better watch out in South Carolina. It's not even close. Pete's, if you look at the polls, it's going to be Pete 100, everybody else 0. It's not even.
I'm amazed that this whole, like, this thing didn't blow up to be bigger than it is.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no, go ahead.
This thing, you're absolutely right for bringing it up, but other things that haven't blown up for Pete, the fact that he basically made sure to foreclose and destroy homes in areas of South Bend, predominantly black and Latino. He did not help or support or show support for the black community there when basically a police officer shot and killed an unarmed black man in South Bend.
Fired the black police chief.
Thank you. Fired the black police chief of South Bend for finding out that two people on the police force were racist.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's literally for finding that out.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
Like, all of this is stuff that, just imagine that Mayor Sanders of Burlington, Vermont. Imagine any of that stuff happened in the 70s, in the 80s. Sorry. Imagine that. Like, that would all be brought up. But this stuff happened, like, in the last several years with Pete Buttigieg. It's so much worse.
And this is not even, it's not even like, oh, I hate this excuse, but, you know, Biden's an older guy from a different generation. I think it's a bullshit excuse, but they use it. They use it. So I'm going to use the consultant excuse. You know, he's from a different generation. Things are a little bit different. He's pretty woke for an old guy. If you're going to, Pete is 36, 37 years old. What the fuck's his excuse?
Pete is a person that I could have, in theory, been in school with. Like, I live a half hour away from South Bend, Indiana, and I am 35 years old. Like, this is a person that ostensibly, like, if I went on Twitter and said, like, if I basically said the equivalent of what he's done in South Bend, I'd be destroyed nonstop for the next several years on Twitter.
We didn't even bring up the stock photos of Kenyans.
No.
Used on his website for his plan for Black America.
I mean, it's not the worst thing, but, like, add it in with all the other stuff, and it's like, Dude, really?
But you know what? Another person who didn't bring it up, when literally for the first time ever, moderators queued up an attack line for a candidate. Kamala Harris, what is up with not going after Pete? She had a, you know, she had a great moment where she spoke about, you know, race and where she, you know, her, you know, how it affects, you know, how race issues affect Black Americans, obviously. But she had a great moment in the debate. But in my opinion, she dropped the ball there because it was actually queued up for her to talk about that all in the framing of Pete Buttigieg being terrible on race. And she refused to call him out for it. And it, thank God that Booker stood up and said something when it came to Biden. Booker seems to be the only person on stage who wanted to actually go on the offense and attack someone for something worth, you know, that, not just an attack for no reason.
An actual real thing. Yeah.
And, you know, he did that with Biden on Biden saying he didn't think marijuana should be legalized. Great moment, by the way, from Booker.
I can't even, like, take that seriously. It's such a goofy-ass thing.
Right. And it's, you know, it's incredible that, you know, first of all, Kamala is just a non-entity now in the race. What a fall that is. I don't think...
Yeah. And like she came in a couple of months ago as like, I'm gonna really claw my way to the top of this thing. And then like apparently just like ran out of energy completely. I don't get it. Like, and here's the thing. I didn't like her at any point. I think that the whole that run of her talking about funding prisons versus funding schools. Like I saw that and I'm like, well, I'm not going to be there for you at any point. But she was at some point, like, it like seemed like she'd probably be somebody in this race, and it's just gone.
Oh, she was a favorite to win. Everyone thought she was going to be the candidate, right? I remember when she entered the race. But, you know, this is how I sort of look at it. Everyone on that stage to me, maybe except Steyer, is preferable to me to Pete Buttigieg. So yeah. I'd even
argue that Steyer, as much as I hate Steyer and think he's just like a nothing candidate, like he clearly on at least some level has like opinions.
That's true. I think my hesitation to Steyer even is the fact that, you know, I would like to argue that a candidate who wins has some level of legitimate actual support. And
no,
I
agree.
I've never met someone who's actually like, I'm a Steyer fan. I mean, this is a guy who's literally bought his way into the debates and the race.
It's also funny, though.
It's true. I mean, nothing. No better way to.
It looks funny when this guy's like actually on there, like saying, like, I did this and I did this, and people are like, who is this person?
Right. Right. I mean, it's gonna be funnier when next debate Deval Patrick finds his way up there.
Oh my God. I really hope that he doesn't. Like him, and I would love to, I know that Bloomberg is gonna be on the debate stage. Like, unless he decides to pump the brakes, I feel like he's gonna spend the money necessary.
Honestly, I want all these people to jump in because there's only one person who isn't gonna be hurt by it, and it's Bernie Sanders.
I agree with you.
We will see. I guarantee you Biden will drop in the polls, Buttigieg will drop in the polls. Warren, I know this might shock some Warren supporters who think the billionaire class hates her, but Warren will drop in the polls.
She's too useful to them as the wonk who's unwilling to just simply say what she wants.
Right. I mean, no doubt about it. They don't like her.
No.
They clearly think in some ways she's nowhere near as bad as a Bernie Sanders. So they'll use her for that for that end.
They understand that she doesn't understand power. That's the thing. They see that. Like when Bernie Sanders talks about rallying voters to push an agenda versus her saying, like reluctantly saying after she's been pushed, yeah, we're going to need a movement. It's just two different things.
Oh, if I don't know if you caught this before the debate. And I don't know if he usually does this before 2019 for the 2020 race, but Tom Perez was on stage with a debate like he does now, rallying the Democratic crowd. And
yeah, he acts like a warm-up comedian. I don't know if you've ever actually listened to the audio of him doing it, but it's super cringe.
Right. But this time around, and I haven't noticed it before. Maybe I didn't catch it, but the use of the word movement, I've never heard used in the ways that it's being used since Bernie Sanders. You know, they bring usually it was the base, the Obama coalition, because these are all terms for the electoral process. This is all, you know, terminology you use when you talk about voting and winning an election. But the use of the term movement, that's not been used before. That's usually for grassroots activism.
Yeah.
That's not something that's been used electorally. From my experience, at least. I'm sure it has been, you know, as a throwaway, but not as the default, like it's being used now
since Bernie Sanders. Yeah, I would agree. There's probably usage of it, but not like primary usage or like high-level people saying, yeah, we're starting a movement. Because what that does is it conjures certain imagery that you can't really back up without grassroots support. And I think that they're kind of having to reluctantly tread those waters a little bit in a way that they probably didn't expect to, because honestly, I think they thought the media was going to be able to like push Bernie Sanders aside. I think that in a lot of cases, they really thought that at this point they would have been able to sort of non-entity him out of the race. Oh, but
he's been underestimated left and right. And I think the thing that is shocking them more than anything is the dude literally surged from a heart attack.
I said, when he had a heart attack, I did not say this publicly because I knew I'd get my ass reamed for it, but I said, this is going to be good to him, to my wife.
Oh, I thought the same thing.
I said it.
Because
I knew it'd be, because here's the thing. The reports that they said this was not a really serious heart attack or anything. He was in there a couple of days. He was out. He was walking around doing like just fine. He didn't have any major surgery. He had a stent put in. That's something they go through, an artery in your leg. That's not really a big deal.
Yes.
But it got so much media attention, and I knew it was going to. And this is the thing that the media tries to, it's been backfiring. Every time something they think goes wrong for Sanders, they overblow it, and it becomes obvious because it's not that. It's never that. It's never the thing that they say. And it's to go back to Bolivia, it's the same thing. They overstate their position, and then the opposite position becomes apparent.
Right. Well, I think the conventional wisdom for previous, you know, throughout history would be, you know, if a candidate has a heart attack, that's in. Stick a fork in them, they're done. I mean, Howard Dean, his campaign was over because of the Dean scream. I mean, that's what killed campaigns prior. But we're in a different world now. And the idea that the candidate who's out there saying that you can go broke from a medical emergency that you, not your fault, I mean, it shouldn't matter if it's your fault or not, but even more ridiculous that it's something just out of the blue, no preparation for it, any other product or service, you can be like, oh, well, got to save up my money till I could afford it. With healthcare, you can't do that. You can't go, well, I'm going to need that heart surgery in a few months when I have a heart attack. I'm going to start saving up for it now, you know?
But they've created products that literally, the health savings accounts, which is supposed to be your thing that saves you from the deductible. It's such a ridiculous program.
Right, but if you don't use that shit at the end of the year, they just keep that money.
Exactly.
So it's not even
it's a scam.
Let's use this hilariously ridiculous, but I love it, scenario where, all right, you're, you know, 40-year-old guy. You look at your dad and your grandpa's history on both, you know, all sides of your family. And you're like, I might have a heart attack by the time I'm late 50s. I'm going to start saving up now. You can't even do that because every year you'd put that money in. And if you didn't have a heart attack that year, there goes that money. Poof.
Ridiculous. And this is the thing. Like, this was touted as something that was going to make deductibles into nothing. Like, A, it was touted It was touted with the HDHP, not necessarily as a package, but at the same time, the high deductible health plans, the ones where it was going to cost a little less, but your deductible was going to be a little higher. So the health savings account was going to swoop in and save us, which was going to be your money. Like, you were going to save up the money for this. And then, as it turns out, like you said, the money resets. It's, I don't even have anywhere to go with it, to be honest. I just hate it so much.
All right. Yeah. It's baffling. It's, you know, but I mean, really it isn't though, when it comes down to it, because, you know, I mean, you know what the position is. They don't want him to win. It's very clear. You know, they could pretend that it's this is not really come up in the debate, but I think it's funny to bring up now, especially because I'm thinking of the story where, I don't know if you know this, but there was this huge $1 billion project that major tech companies were bidding for. And it's called Project Jedi, if I'm remembering correctly, with the
Pentagon, I'm unaware of it.
With the Pentagon, and basically, it came down to Microsoft and Amazon, and Pentagon gave it to Microsoft. It was something like a $10 billion contract, and now Amazon is suing the government because they're claiming that they didn't get the contract specifically because Donald Trump hates Jeff Bezos, and. Listen, I'm not gonna defend Donald Trump and stand up for Donald Trump. I'm certainly not gonna stand on the side of Jeff Bezos either. But that could be the case. It seems like something Trump would do. It's not shocking to me. But it made me think how just a few months ago, people thought it'd be crazy that the Washington Post would cover Bernie in an unflattering or negative manner because Jeff Bezos doesn't like the fact that Bernie Sanders goes after Amazon all the time. And I'm thinking, wow, that's so weird that they think that Trump is doing something to them because he doesn't like them, but they wouldn't dare do that to Bernie. Listen, it's not that Jeff Bezos is on the phone calling these reporters saying, you need to do 20 hit pieces on Bernie every month. It's the fact that the makeup of Washington Post, the people who get hired there to cover certain things, mm-hmm. B, it's just fundamentally they know how to cover these things. It doesn't need to be explicitly said. I mean,
they don't want the attention. Like, if you develop a reputation as, like, I'm going to be the one that contradicts what Jeff Bezos wants, like, that's going to eventually get to Jeff Bezos. Like, he bought that paper for a reason, you know?
Right. I mean, just look at the NBC talking heads and their post-debate coverage tonight. It was Claire McCaskill. It was Chris Matthews. Well, he's on the show or whatever. And then that guy, Stephen Schmidt, I think his name is, the former McCain campaign manager. Claire McCaskill, a moderate, if you could even call her a right-wing Democrat, who mm-hmm. lost her Senate seat even though she ran explicitly against the left in her own party, thinking that was what was going to help her win. So you have Claire McCaskill and then a guy who's a Republican consultant on the panel for the post Democratic debate show on MSNBC, supposedly the Democratic friendly cable news channel. Now MSNBC didn't get McCaskill and Schmidt on the show and say to them, listen, we need you to say Klobuchar did a great job tonight. We need you to say that she was really, she was showed that she's at the, should be in the top tier. They don't need to tell them that.
No.
They know to have them on because they know they're going to say that.
It's the brand.
Right. Like, that's what people don't get. It's like, this is like media, the idea that media criticism like this is somehow new and it's like Trumpian. That's another thing I hate. The idea that criticizing the media is now Trumpian. No, Trump's attacks on the media are, oh, there's legitimate reporting from actual journalists that make me look unflattering because of the things I actually did. That's fake news. That's bad what Trump does. The left-wing media criticism that's been going on since, I don't know, as long as the left has been the left in this country is, oh, you keep hiring centrists, moderates, and right-wingers to push these ideals, these policies, and these candidates who literally, when you ask the American people, have no support. I mean, that's the criticism there. It's not even close. It's completely different sort of criticism.
Well, I mean, it's a criticism power structure versus a criticism of these people hurt my feelings and I don't like them.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Like you can't compare Noam Chomsky and Edward S. Herman to Donald Trump. They're not the same thing.
Right. Exactly. Although I do want to see like a Chomsky doing like a Trump impression now.
Well, consent takes on a completely different, like manufacturing consent. It's a totally different book if Trump writes it.
He's manufactured consent, all right. all right, let's talk about. So we talked about Bernie. I want to make sure we hit everyone here. We talked about Bernie, Warren, we touched Harris, we touched Booker a little bit. I think Booker and even Harris did well tonight. If we want to talk about horse race politics, you know, their policies are their policies, but in terms of performance at the debate, how they can be viewed as winning a debate, like it's, you know, like the media likes to talk about like it's a game of some sort.
By the criteria of elections as a sport, yes. Fine. They were fine.
I think Sanders did exceptionally well. I think Harris and Booker came off good. I think Buttigieg and Warren, for their place in the polls, they came off underwhelming. In fact, I thought they weren't that great at all. Biden, not as Biden-y as usual. The beginning, he had that weird tangent where he just said a bunch of words that went nothing. But then other than that, he was mostly coherent. You know, again, not great answers, but they weren't, you know, he didn't tell.
They weren't the train wreck that we've seen in a couple of debates.
Right. He didn't tell the black youth of America to go turn on the record player.
he told them to go put their records on.
Yes. Right. So that's a plus for him. He's. I don't think he gained anything tonight. I do think the most personable, the most heartwarming moment of the night was easily when Biden was talking about how Kim Jong-un said how Biden should be whipped like a dog or beaten with a stick or something like a dog, and Bernie chimed in. Yeah, well, other than that, you like him. Yeah, it was a great. Good. Obviously, I didn't do it. You know, Bernie had a stand-up comedian pro.
Yeah, he's been really taking on a lot of funny qualities. Like, I don't know if you've watched him at rallies lately, but it's almost like he's been preparing jokes. But I feel like they're almost coming off the top of his head because some of them are like you can watch. I watch from time to time. I'll catch a Bernie speech from a rally, and it seems like he workshops jokes sometimes, and you'll see them. But I actually, one thing that I do want to say positive about Biden was the joke that he almost sort of tripped into, where he said, when presidents get to tweeting, and he just sort of like stopped and he goes, like, I thought that was actually funny, although I don't think it was entirely on purpose.
Right. Another really weird moment from Biden, actually. It's literally the joke where it's like, oh, my shirt that says the shirt that says I'm not, I don't know, I'm trying to think. The shirt that says I didn't murder Jeffrey Epstein is surely asking a lot of, you know, bringing a lot of questions as to whether or not I murdered Jeffrey Epstein. When he said how he brought up corruption and said, by the way, the Obama administration, no corruption, spotless record. It's like, whoa,
yeah,
buddy,
that was,
really weird.
That
first
was
of all,
a really. Yeah, that was bizarre. Like, why would, like, no, don't say something like that. Because, like, up until that point in what he was saying, it almost sounded like he's going to get through this without saying something that sounds off. And then he goes, the spotless reputation of the, like, the no corruption, absolutely. It's like, well, I don't necessarily think that he led the most corrupt administration of all time. But, like, you do realize that you sound like you're trying to, like, get out of jail free card here, basically pull out that.
Right. Right. No, I don't think anyone's saying that Obama is anywhere like Donald Trump.
No, nobody in their right mind is going to be like, he is Donald Trump. He's the same thing.
Right. It's that same idea that we see throughout, and even the media does this. You know, and a question was thrown at Bernie. There's a number of really stupid questions thrown at Bernie tonight. But the question that was thrown at Bernie was, do you want to tear the system down, Bernie, or something like that? And it's like, when has Bernie Sanders ever said he's an anarchist? I mean, when has Bernie ever come out and, like, you know, with a black hoodie and a bandana covering half his face? I don't think I've ever seen Bernie spray painting all cops are bastards on any walls. I don't think
Starbucks windows. Tom Steyer's pissed off.
Right, and it's the idea that Medicare for All requires at some point all of a sudden nobody having health care. It is
126 million people, according to Amy Klobuchar.
No, but the idea is even worse. I think that they try to put forward where they'll be like a split second where all of a sudden every insurance company shuts down, everyone will have no insurance, and the government has to quickly then throw up Medicare for All and try to cover everybody really quick. It's like, when has anyone ever said that? It's so stupid. The idea is everyone keeps what they've got now. Obamacare, you know, criticize it, should be criticized. I have my criticisms of Obama. Obamacare, clearly better than we had beforehand, though, so we're going to keep what we got right now while we get Medicare for All rolling. Medicare for All rolls out while everyone is still on whatever plans they're on. Everyone gets on Medicare for All. Then, boom, all those other plans, gone. But the people are already on Medicare for All, so it's not like they have no health care. It's that simple. Why does no one understand that? It's so ridiculous that you don't...
He's even said it multiple times in public.
And so that's where the whole tear down the system thing comes from. I mean, I really do wish... We had a Bernie Sanders, you know, taking a I would love to see Bernie Sanders winning the election and then running in and, like, taking a hammer to the White House, like, knocking down the columns of
bring just lights a Molotov and just tosses it. I was gonna do this the whole time.
Right. I'd love to see Bernie wear, like, the Bane face mask and going, like, people of Gotham. Like, I would love to see it, but...
It would be funny.
Right. I really want to do a Bernie accent, but in the Bane voice. I really...
Baney Sanders.
Right. Yes, exactly. But, you know, it's ridiculous. Another ridiculous question thrown at Sanders tonight was, and this is completely from... A single tweet. Now, they didn't quote the tweet like Brian Williams quoted freaking Horse Whisperer on his show to attack Sanders one night. That was the most bizarre. But this, I have seen this criticism from no one but this one random individual with literally, he has like 6,000 followers who just went a little bit viral from people dunking on him. But I'm sure, you know, the moderates of the world saw the guy's tweet from the dunking and were like, oh, this guy makes a good point. Apparently, at one or two Bernie Sanders rallies, the crowd started chanting, lock him up, in reference to Donald Trump. And this guy comes out and says, oh, how Trumpian it was. You know, we didn't like when Donald Trump's crowd, the MAGA crew, were chanting, lock her up at Hillary. It is just as gross that the Bernie Sanders crowd would dare chant, lock him up at Trump. We don't call for the jailing of our political opponents. And they asked him this question on national television. It's a bullshit question, first of all. And
it's silly.
And second of all, the idea that they're equivalent is just
unbelievable. Exactly.
I mean, you literally have it was a Rachel Maddow question. She literally has devoted her television show for the past 3 years to tell us how Donald Trump is a criminal. And then she asks, should we really be, you know, saying lock him up, though? Are you kidding me? Like, the idea, like, this is really everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party, right? That we go out there and we say that this guy has committed crimes, but when it comes to saying outright, should he be punished for these crimes? We go, well, it's not civil. We don't want to hurt the discourse here. It's ridiculous. And no one ever talks about that, you know, other crimes in that way. No one ever goes, oh, we don't want to jail, you know, all those black men being stopped and frisked for, you know, and found with like a small dime bag on them, or, you know, even planted this shit, you know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. No one ever says, oh, the people jumping the turnstile in the subway shouldn't be, because, you know, do we really want to call these guys criminals? No one ever says that about the low-level shit that hurts poor people in this country or minorities. It's just, you know, the powerful, we don't want to hurt their feelings. We're going to be civil. Just, and they threw that question at Sanders, of course. And he answered it well. He basically, you know, without saying it like that, he basically said, well, Donald Trump is a criminal, isn't he? I mean, he's a corrupt individual who we're seeing right now, his crimes laid out bare. I mean, I don't know what you're going to tell, you know, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, even if you're going to, like, even if you're looking at it from the perspective of, like, you have all this stuff happen to poor people, like, what if we're even just rhetorically calling for it, like, just as a piece of opposition to that, to call for it with people who are in power and doing the wrong thing? Like, it just rhetorically, it makes perfect sense to do. And it's bizarre to equivocate, like, okay, so I don't necessarily think that Hillary Clinton is entirely clean or anything like that, but to call for her, to call for her arrest during the campaign, imprisonment during the campaign, when neither of them are president, neither Hillary Clinton, neither Donald Trump, neither of them are anything other than somebody who wants to be president, and somebody, or a crowd rather, chanting that a president who has done a bunch of corrupt stuff in the open, like basically for everyone to see. It's just, they're totally different things. I don't necessarily personally believe, like, I'm a prison abolitionist myself. I don't believe in that stuff, but rhetorically speaking, like, it's not equivalent, and you're really just kind of advocating for holding a powerful people accountable in some way.
All right, listen, I think we should abolish prisons in many ways too, but it would be great if we kept a couple open and just, you know, just specifically for
just
people
for
like
Donald Trump. Just and for Tom Steyer,
billionaire class,
Jeff Bezos.
Something Steyer said really bugged me. When he talked about, like, you know, how he was the good billionaire, and how he gave his money to sort of support grassroots activist groups. And listen, if you got money, I think that is a good way to use it. I think people like Bloomberg,
if you got it,
Steyer,
sure,
Steyer should do that. But he framed it in a way where it was like, you know, I did this. I chose to do it, you know, and it's like, you know, should we really be living in a society, in a world where billionaires need to decide what money goes to what causes? I mean, it sort of rubbed me the wrong way, the way he framed it. Who else do we have tonight? I want to make sure we hit it, touch upon everybody. Warren, Buttigieg, Biden, Sanders, Booker, Harris. Oh, right. Klobuchar, we mentioned her for like a second, but oh my god, if she knocks Medicare for All and debt-free college the way she's been doing it any longer, I'm gonna like friggin' scream. She said how, you know, she would love to just staple diplomas to everyone's seat, as if saying, you know, what she's basically saying is she thinks tuition-free college, free college means everyone just gets handed a diploma, as if it's not, no, just giving everyone the opportunity to go to college and do the work to get an education, yeah, just without having to worry about the monetary and financial issues that come with it. She really, like, is framing it as in just everyone goes to college, everyone walks out with a diploma, because it was just free. Like, they just, you know, they walk in, they get a diploma, boom, bada bing, they don't got to put any work in. First of all, it's like really disgusting to frame it that way, because it shows just how much she thinks of people who don't go to college. Like, they don't want to put in the work. It has nothing to do with, to her, it has nothing to do with affordability. I mean, the idea.
And also, even on top of that, it has nothing to do with the education and everything to do with just the degree itself. Like, when you say, like, we're just going to give out degrees for free, then what we're saying is that the only thing that matters about going to college is the degree. And that's absolute horseshit.
Right.
It's no, you go to it to learn. Like, we want people to have as much information as we can possibly give them. That would inherently make our democracy stronger in theory.
Right, right. It's, you know, another thing is that when we talk about Klobuchar's whole, you know, and then the thing, let me get to this, because this is what I was thinking about when I wanted to get to before I forget it. The whole thing with everyone should get a free car then and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. It is ridiculous because she's comparing people not dying from healthcare.
Yeah.
The lack of healthcare to getting a free car. The connecting those things is like abhorrent to me.
Mm-hmm. That's not to say that transportation is optional. You need it for the most part, but like you don't need it like you need somebody to operate on your heart as you're having a heart attack. It, like a real like frickin' like level 5 like need to open the chest type heart attack. Like it's not even, they're not in the same ballpark in any way.
Right. And, you know, Klobuchar is being really pushed by the media, isn't she? I mean,
there's no reason for her even to be around at this point. Like she's got nothing of value to add. Like what she does is just talk about how, she has more experience than Pete Buttigieg. And like, sure, you probably actually do. That's probably true. But like almost anybody in the government, or for that matter, not in the government, has more experience than Pete Buttigieg. Like everybody with like an ongoing job for like a full career where they've worked from age 20 to age 50 has more experience than Pete Buttigieg. Like that's not really a point that somebody should be super proud about. And that's like one of her main things that she's been trying to go at super hard lately to get herself some degree of attention. It's like, why are you, she doesn't have, like she does have policies and all of this stuff, but like her main, like, I guess thing that she's preaching is just against other people's policies or against other people. And it's like, people don't like that. It's just irritating.
Right. And so let's, I guess, wrap it up with the two who got sort of the least time, but you know, I think it sort of shows how the media's candidates get time even when they're not deserving of it. You know, I don't mean to throw Booker under the bus here, because I think, for the most part of the debates, he adds something, like I brought up before. You know, he's happy to go on the attack. But Gabbard and Yang now both poll higher than candidates like Klobuchar and Booker, yet they get half the time, if even that, when they are on stage at these debates. I mean, there's no, and I know people may not get it, but I think that clearly, sometimes you'll have candidates who, just based on the fact that candidates are debating each other, some may get more time because they have to respond to the attacks, regardless of where they are in the polls. Fine, whatever. That's going to happen if the debates are actually run like that. But how these debates have been run, where it's just moderator asking questions, we are seeing that, you know, moderators are basically giving people the time that they want to allot these candidates. And if you're going to do that, then it should be inherently tied, for the most part, you know, not down to the minute, but, you know, for the most part, for the end of the, you know, by the end of the debate, the candidates who poll higher should have been asked more questions, because those are the candidates that more people want to know about. So,
well, that in theory deserve more scrutiny, for that matter.
And that too,
like,
yes.
If people are getting the most amount of attention, like, they're going to be putting out policies that have more of a chance of being passed or actually being considered. So in theory, we would want more questions asked to them. However, as you're saying, in practice, not so much.
Right. So, you know, Gabbard, I think, first of all, I'd like her to drop out. There's two candidates who are taking directly 100% from Bernie, and it's Gabbard and Yang. I think they both need to drop out. I think they've done their part. Nice to know you guys. Keep active. You guys will make wonderful allies in the Bernie Sanders campaign. I don't think you guys are, the face of the progressive movement. I don't think you guys are the future of the progressive movement. I don't think you guys are progressives, but you're allies. So, you know, Gabbard's endorsed Sanders, in 2016. Yang has spoken highly of Bernie many times, called him inspiring. Also, they're considered the outsider candidates. So people who basically care about that first and foremost, not to throw them under the bus and you know, call them out, but weirdos, I call them, because if you care about simply someone being an outsider and not about policy, very weird to me. But
I was thinking skeptical, like they tend to be skeptical of the same things. And you're like, weirdos, like, all right, actually, that kind of works.
Right, right. I mean, listen, if you're skeptical and it was just Gabbard and Yang and all the other candidates and Bernie wasn't running, fine, I get it. But when you literally have one of those candidates running and he's doing really well and you finally have one of these outsider underdog candidates ready to actually win the election, you think you'd go, oh, let's all fucking get behind him so we could get one of our guys in the White House. No, but okay. Without a doubt, when Gabbard and Yang drop out, this is what's going to happen. Nearly 100% of their support is going to go to Bernie. And the single digit percentage point that doesn't is going to just not vote.
Yeah, definitely. You're absolutely right. You're 100% right. Like, especially with your Yang gang. Like, the Yang gang is so in, like, the people who are just endlessly saying Yang gang, they come into other people's conversation. And this isn't to, it's not easy to raise that kind of support out of nothing. So, to be truthful, I do think that Yang has done something that is admirable. And so is Tulsi to some extent as well. However, there's a segment of both of their fan bases, like you're saying, that is very much a fan base. It is there because of the personality, because of the person. And with that gone, you're right. They just won't vote. And then, like you said, I agree with you as well. These are more or less like people who either are skeptical of the same things that Bernie Sanders is skeptical of, or are just kind of that outsider weirdo. Like, I think that more or less you're right here. And I just think that, like, it would be so good if they dropped. Like, there's no way to put how great it would be, A, to just have less candidates, and B, to have this outsider support just go with the outsider that has a chance.
Right, right. So, you know, altogether, let me look at this candidate list. Let's drop, I guess, our final thoughts on this debate here. You know, I think I have the list here. So we get, you know, Warren and Buttigieg, I think we already mentioned how they fared. Mm-hmm. Biden, we both agree, I think, that he didn't do as bad as usual. But again, he's still Biden.
Could have been worse.
Right.
But Biden.
Right. Sanders, winner of the debate. Clearly, perhaps his best debate performance.
I would say that if he keeps on this trend, like, it's going to be really hard to beat him in a debate.
Right. Booker and Harris, we both have our issues with them as candidates, but overall, they did pretty well in this debate.
Yeah. I mean, it's as well as they're going to do anyway.
Right. Klobuchar, here's what I think. This is where I think I'm going to differ, where it's actually going to differ, where in terms of... in terms of how I think they performed in the debate and my personal opinion of them. Mm-hmm. I think Klobuchar, from my perspective, did not do well. But I think she spoke to a portion of the electorate, and they gave her plenty of time to do so, that she might actually get a small bump based on the amount of time they gave her and her ability to basically speak to that crowd. I mean, she might take some from Buttigieg. She might take some from Biden.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I think it's... She's been targeting Buttigieg hard, and I think that her rhetoric is, like, it does speak to something that's true about him, which is, like, this dude, like, has a very small amount of support in the town that he's mayor of. He doesn't have a lot of experience outside of that, unless we're talking about being in the military, which is not the same thing as administrating anything. What she's saying about him isn't wrong. And I think that that's kind of inherently going to help bolster her position. Now, did she say anything that I care about at all? No. But from, again, a rhetorical perspective, I think you're right. I think she played the right cards.
Right. And no, I would love to see her actually rise up in the polls a bit. Now, let me make this clear, because mainstream media has been pushing that there's some sort of Klobuchar surge and there's Klobuchar momentum and all this other. No, there's none of that. Has she gained a point or two from her performances prior to this debate? Yes. But I'm not seeing this equivalent to the attention she's gotten in the media. But would I like to see her gain maybe 5 points, 10 points, and maybe 5 points from Buttigieg, 5 points from Biden? Yes, I'd love to see that. Split that centrist vote as much as possible, baby. That's what I'd like. That's why I want Bloomberg and I want Patrick in there. I want them to get in those debates. Let's do it. Who else? Now we got, all right, Gabbard and Yang and Steyer. Time for them to drop out. I appreciate Gabbard being on the stage for her attacks. That attack on Harris, what is it, 2 or 3 debates ago was fantastic. But since then, actually,
I mean, it basically derailed her.
Right.
That was pretty much what screwed her.
Right. But actually, I disagree with that. I think people give Gabbard a little bit too much credit for that.
Really?
What screwed her, shockingly, is I think the attack she did on her attempt to recreate the attack on Biden the second time around.
Oh.
I think the first time around, it gave her a bump from people who like that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I think the second time around, she tried to go after Biden again with that. And I think it didn't play with a certain crowd. There is a portion of they're supporting Biden, obviously, so of course they're like this, who don't like the race card. And I'm using that in terms of their view of it. Obviously, I don't think she pulled the race card. But they don't like the race card being pulled on their guy.
Right.
And I think that hurt her. And I think that's why we see people not attacking each other that hard. Booker's done a good job of doing it in doing real pointed attacks, but in like a lighthearted way, like, you know, saying, Biden, are you high for not wanting to legalize marijuana? You and me take it as a burn, because it is a burn. But I think,
well, it's funny.
Yeah, and that too. It's funny. So some people also take it lightheartedly, like, oh, he was nice while pointing out the difference of opinion.
Exactly, yeah.
But the Harris attack against Biden, while people like you and me loved it, I don't think everybody did. The Castro attack on Biden, while people like you and me loved it, we know people did not like it when Castro...
No.
Yes. That hurt Castro a lot.
It did.
People accused him of being ageist.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, was it necessarily a comment that I would have made? I don't know. Like, I feel like I can see why people would say that, but at the same time, he did just say two contradicting things, and really the only thing that Castro actually did was point out that he said two contradicting things. Was there a mild implication? Sure, but like the more prominent thing that was said there is like, you basically just said the opposite of what you just said, which is wrong, dude.
Right. Yeah. So that's what I think happened there. Gabbard, her attacks haven't been as strong since, she tried to go after Warren the last time around and they cut her off. She tried to go after her and Buttigieg butted heads today. And I thought she did a good job with Buttigieg.
Yeah.
But I don't think the attack was as pointed, so I don't think it's going to play in the media and with people.
No,
as well
and
as it
he
should.
Also got her back.
Right. So I think it's not going to be. So her whole point of being there is done. I don't think she'll get in any more attacks. Yang, we now know what he advocates for. It's out there. Nice to hear it. I don't agree with his versions of it, but again, nice to hear some of it. I think he's a good ally to have, you know, maybe put him in an administration and a tech role, an advisory role. I think he's, you know, of all the tech guys, he's probably not the worst. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, he clearly knows there's issues with tech, which already puts him miles ahead of most tech bros.
I think he actually correctly identifies a lot of those issues, too, which is... It's more like a lot of people said, like, breaking up the big tech companies would be good. And he said, I don't necessarily completely like he signaled he didn't completely disagree with that, but that he doesn't think is the problem and that it's more how these networks work. And it's like, I think that's closer to correct than just like break. Because if we broke all of these things up and they all got set off to do exactly what they're doing now, we'd eventually end up with the same situation where one of them survives and a few others don't. They'd either buy them again. Like, it's what happened with AT&T. Like, those companies reassemble themselves over time.
Right, right, yeah.
And I agree with him on that. Right. I think that that's a correct identification of a problem. Is the solution necessarily to create, you know, laws that more heavily encourage parents to monitor what their children are doing online? I don't know if that's really the answer.
Right. So this is what I'd like to say. I'd like to see the next debate be Warren, Sanders, Biden, Buttigieg, and that's it. That's where we are now. That's clearly the field. That's going to be it. This is it. I mean, I'm sort of, actually I'm conflicted sort of, because I think that's where it should be soon. But I would, you know, but I would like to also see the other candidates who are taking away from the centrists continuing there as well. So I am conflicted, because I do think we're wasting a lot of time on these debates on people who are just non-contenders. They're inconsequential. Yeah. Do I think they should be forced out and not be on, should they not be allowed to be on the ballot? No. But I mean, we really need to start focusing on what the difference is between Buttigieg, Warren, Biden, and Sanders, because people apparently don't know what the difference is between them, clearly. The fact that people are jumping back and forth from all these people, except Sanders, you know, Sanders has got the hardcore base, is a problem.
And that's in my opinion, that also, I mean, it's, we're in a good position as Sanders supporters seeing that, though. Like, it's fortunate that at this moment, we have seen such consistent, in fact, growing support at this point for Bernie Sanders in probably like the shakiest race I could imagine. Like, from 2016, the Democratic primary was basically just Sanders and Clinton. There were a couple of other ones. They didn't matter. They got out, I believe, mostly before now. Like, it was mainly Sanders and Clinton debating, I think, for the majority of the actual voting section of the primary.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't expect, like, thinking about, okay, well, if Bernie's going to do this again, is this going to be I didn't think it was going to be like basically set up like the Trump debates. Like, I mean, Bernie Sanders doesn't get Bernie Sanders is a genuine threat to the media rather than a boon for the media. So he's not getting the kind of attention that Trump did. But like, they've set it up in the same way. And that's not something I expected, to be completely honest with you.
Right. Yeah, so I really don't know where I stand on this, because I do think there are people who, this is not so much a debate, but we can end on this because it's getting late and I know we're all feeling it, but it's incredible to me that whenever I see someone endorse Warren, they talk about all the things, the reasons why they like Warren, and every single person who's done this has listed every issue that Sanders supports, but even more so than Warren. And it's like, what is the disconnect here? Like, if you say, I want someone who supports all these things, but I also would like to see a woman president. That's cool. I get it. Or you can say, I like Warren because I'm friendly with her or have been a part of her campaigns and I feel close to her, whatever it is. Fine, I get it. But all these people come out and say, my most important issue is healthcare or Medicare for all.
Yeah, and she just walked it back.
Yeah, it's like, come on. It's like, what is the real deal here? Are you out to just fool people? Like, I don't get it,
It does make people sound suspicious in some ways, because it's very, very obvious at this point, like, who is the Medicare for all candidate or who is the willing to fight candidate. That was one of the higher profile endorsements today, was talking about how we need a candidate that's willing to fight. And that automatically, like, to me, willing to fight Warren versus Sanders. Like it's, I mean, that's not really an issue. Willing to fight. Yeah. It's a big deal. It's important that we understand who the enemies are, who has the power, who is actually pulling the levers and who needs to be pushed out in order to attain the goals that we want. But isn't it obvious, like, between these two at this point, like, which one is quote unquote willing to fight and also has a robust set of very progressive reforms, changes, in some cases, very sweeping changes? I don't get it. Like, I don't know what puts, like, are they just, do they just not like the idea that it's Bernie Sanders? I that's the only thing I can figure. They have some sort of aversion to him that must have, I don't know where it came from, because if you actually paid attention to him throughout the course of the first time around, the only things he did wrong was just basically not understand a couple of things. That's it. But like, if you paid attention to the media, you would think that he's this awful sexist person who apparently, now that he's getting some attention, must have changed at some point into a better person. And it's like, I don't trust this change. Like, it's that kind of a move, like the I don't trust this change type move, but there's no change.
Right. Right. All right, Peter. Thank you for joining me tonight. Staying up late. It's I don't know what time it is where you are, but it's almost 1:30 here.
Same.
I appreciate you taking the time. This was fun and informative.
I had a good time. Yes, thank you for having me.
Where can people find you online?
Well, on YouTube, just type in Peter Coffin. That'll bring you straight to me. On Twitter, it's at Peter Coffin. On Twitch, it's at Peter, or I guess on Twitch it's just Peter Coffin. I don't do as much on Twitch, but it's basically Peter Coffin everywhere.
apparently, I'm seeing this right now. Apparently, the Sanders campaign is saying they had their biggest single day of donations since the campaign started. So,
well,
there we go. I mean, whew.
It just keeps getting better, doesn't it?
Right. So, folks, check out Peter on his. I mean, your YouTube channel is way bigger than mine, so I don't even know why I'm telling people.
We're both tired.
All right, Peter, have a good night. Take care.
Thank you, you too.
Talk to you soon, buddy.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
All right, folks. As always, you can support this show by going to patreon.com/MattBinder. Oh, and this unraveled on Twitter this past week. I'm slowly losing my mind, but this unraveled on Twitter this past week. If we reach 150 patrons, I will, and I might amend that. Let's see where we go. I might even go a little bit lower. Let's see. But if more people join the Patreon, I will record myself doing the Pete Buttigieg high hopes dance. People have been clamoring for Michael Brooks to do it, apparently, on Twitter. Michael said he would do it for 30,000 patrons. So I jumped in and undercut him and said, I'll do it for a measly 150. 150 patrons. So patreon.com/MattBinder. I mean, you're not just getting the dance, you're helping grow the show. So let's do it for that reason, too. As usual, the debates, because we end them late, there will not be a patron-only show tonight. But last week, guys, I did like a 2.5-hour debate with Janice on Bolivia. And then after that 2.5 hours, I did another like 50 minutes of just a patron show. So I think I'm good with content covering you guys. But I'll always give you more, you know that. Just not tonight. I'm tired. But I will read two comments because they came from my Super Chat live stream watchers. What do you mean? Threw me a super chat. Just no comment. Just wanted to give me some a one-off donation tonight. Really appreciate it. What do you mean, videos? And I would like to also say, I don't know if you're still watching. I know it's the afternoon there in Australia where you are. I'd like to have you on the show. Reach out to me, or I'll reach out to you, and we'll get you on the show, so you could get us up to speed with what's going on in Australia. with the right wing there and politics in general there. And then Rec Soul with the super chat. Just hair and the cool glasses emoji smiley face. And I'm looking through my super chat list, and it seems like the past like two or three shows, Rec Soul has given me a super chat to just comment on my hair and tell me that my hair is nice and cool. So thank you, Rec Soul, for the super chat and the kind words about my hairdo. It's getting a little bit too, I like long hair, but it's getting a little bit too out there. Not out there as in, you know, it looks, but my hair, when it gets to a certain point, gets sort of very greasy, and so I'm uncomfortable. It's almost at that point, so I'm probably getting a trim, just a trim soon, just so it's at the level that makes me feel comfortable, but still long. I don't like short hair. Also, I'm 33 now. I don't know how much longer I'll have this full, luscious head of hair, so I'm going to take full advantage and keep it for as long as I got it. You know, I'm not gonna, there'll be a time when I'll have to shave my head so I pretend I'm purposefully bald, I'm sure. But who knows, maybe I'll be, I don't even know, knock on wood. And then youtube.com/Matt Binder, subscribe, please subscribe to the YouTube channel, really want to grow the YouTube channel. Follow me on Twitter @MattBinder, follow me on Facebook, search Matt Binder. Follow me on Instagram. I don't use it so much, but if people start following me in there, I'll use it @MattBinder. If you are a patron already, or if you're going to become a patron and you don't get the Discord link automatically, please reach out to me. I will get you the Discord invite for patrons only. There seems to be something broken with the automated system on patrons end. I'll see about fixing that. What else? iTunes review, Google Play review. Wherever you listen to the podcast, leave a review, especially on iTunes. Just go there. It takes 5 seconds. Log into your iTunes account. I don't know, it's not even called iTunes anymore. Go to your Apple Podcast account. Search for the podcast. Review it. Star review, written review. It takes literally seconds, and it really does actually help. Apple sort of pushes up podcasts in the rankings based on these reviews. And people will see it, discover it. Word of mouth helps out a lot. Please tell people about the show, and not just anyone, obviously tell anyone, friends, family, whatever. But if you have a content creator that you enjoy and they take guests, whether it be video, audio only, whatever, reach out to them, say, hey, you guys should have on Matt Binder. Send them my stuff. Or if you want me to have someone on this show, send me their stuff. I'll be happy to invite them on. And, you know, I take... And if you're a patron, I'll give your suggestions extra thought. I should go to the patrons and shout them out to end the program. Without this show... I mean, without these people, this show would not be possible. Just wouldn't exist. And those people are Abigail T, Adam, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew C, Andrew H, Angela, Ari R, Ben, Benji, Bobby M, Brosnan, BZ, Champagne Kami, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Connor R, Cyber Snowstorm, Dan K, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Froz K, FTW All Day, Future MD, excuse me, George A, Greg D, Grimlock, Ian J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jeremy M, John B, John S, Jonathan B, Jonathan L, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin S, Katie S, Katz, Caushal, Lisa D, Lisa H, Mark S, Matt Z, Max W, User Me, Mitch V, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namde Net, Null Style, Odeath, Peter G, Kuster, Ryan Left Is Best, Scott R, Sean H, Stephen R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, Struggle Stephen, TM, Tammy G, Terrence R, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Todd K, Tom G, Tom M, Why That Thai Guy, Will P, Utopian, Zachary P, Zarin, and Zoe. Show's not possible without you guys. Oh, and I want to thank everyone for all the kind words I've been receiving about the last show, the debate on Bolivia. I've been receiving an overwhelming response from people who thought it was a really good show, who thought it was an important show, who thought I handled it well, who thought just really positive things about it. And it made me feel like, you know, that, you know, it reinforced my belief that this was an important thing to do and talk to her. Someone on the Bolivian opposition side. And I want to do more shows like that because I think it is important to let the other side talk so we can get their positions on record. And then to also not just let it go unchecked like every other media outlet that talks to these people do. All right. Folks, have a good night. See you guys in the next episode. And in terms of the time right now at 1:30 in the morning on the East Coast, next time you see me during this hour, maybe not. Who knows? Who knows what'll come up? And maybe they'll have to do an emergency pod for something. Otherwise, catch you all for the next Dem Debate 2 in December. All right. See you all next time. On Doomed.